fellow travelers, and welcome to this episode of the First in the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Richard Fairgray. You know him as the author of the web series Haunted Hill. Malcolm, join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Fairgray. Welcome to the First in the Stars podcast.
Hi, good to be here.
It's definitely my pleasure, sir. I always like to ask my guests what their inspirations were to become a writer and who were your earliest influences.
My inspiration was money. I'm going to say that like right off the bat. When I was a kid, I genuinely believed that two things. I knew I wanted to make stuff, and I liked the idea of making stuff and selling it because I loved money as a kid. But also, I genuinely believed that no one else in the world was making comics because I'd never actually seen one in real life. I'd just seen them like on TV shows. Mm-hmm. So I thought that if I could be the only person out there doing it, I would be a millionaire.
So, as someone who is now the adult, what's your inspiration now of becoming, while still being a writer?
Well, obviously I've successfully become a millionaire and it all worked out perfectly, right?
Yeah, of course.
I think, I just gravitated toward storytelling since I was so young, and I never really got over that. And here I am. I mean, I realized the other day I'm coming up on the 30th anniversary of my first comic. And it was like, I mean, yes, it was self-published, but I was blackmailing my school librarian to get free photocopying and like then selling it at the school athletics day where I was obviously not taking part because not good at the athletics. And it's weird. Like I've never thought about doing anything else. Like I've dipped into other things here and there. Like I worked in film for a little bit and I kind of paid my way through college doing stand-up comedy. Which is, I haven't done for 17 years. Mm. And for some reason, it still shows up on every bio that anyone writes of me is that I'm also a stand-up comedian. I'm like, no, like I was never good at it. There are so many people out there who are genuinely talented and hardworking and have like made careers from it. And yeah. I was like a goof up there doing very bad jokes on stage.
So I read an interesting story about you. So I read that you wrote a story while you were in kindergarten that got into tons of trouble.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Now, I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit about the story. And also, what was the moral takeaway from that incident?
Okay, so my parents had been really insistent that I learned to read and write before I started kindergarten. I'm from New Zealand, so you start kindergarten when you're four. Mm-hmm. So when I was three, well, you have to start when you're four, but you can usually get in early if there's an opening. So I was about three and a half, maybe a little, like it might have been right before my birthday, I think. And I had decided to write a story called Donald Duck and the Haunted House. Mm-hmm. I was completely obsessed with this Mickey Mouse video game where you went into a haunted house and you had to walk along a rope that bubbles came up and disintegrated. And then there was a maze that was very boring. Yeah. But I loved haunted houses. So the premise for the story was that Mickey and Donald were going to meet and go and like look for ghosts in a haunted house together. And Mickey doesn't show up. So Donald is very sad and goes in on his own. And in the attic of the house, he finds a ghost. And the ghost is sad because he has no friends. And Donald realizes that he doesn't have any friends either. So he takes out a gun and shoots himself in the face so that he can stay and be friends with the ghost forever. And I got in so much trouble. Like my parents were called in, like, you know, everyone had to have very serious conversations about whether I was okay and all of that. I was like, I've never had so much attention for anything I've ever done in my life. Like, I'm going to do this forever.
Yeah.
So that was, it was like when on Valentine's Day the following year, we had to draw a picture for school of people who were in love, which, by the way, that is a garbage activity. Like every single thing about that sucks. Like, hey, four-year-olds, do some slash fic. So I did I drew a picture of Postman Pat and Reverend Tim's kissing. And oh boy, huge trouble again. Suddenly they were like freaked out because I'd drawn two boys having a bit of a kiss. And again, I was just like delighted. And I think ever since then I've been like I feel, you know, I'm a weirdo. Full disclosure, I'm a weirdo. I'm a gross boy who will eat a lot of things that I find on the floor, and yeah. I always have been, I always will be, and like I can use drawing and writing as a way of like apologizing for existing. And I can, like, people may never get me if they know me or if they meet me, but if they read my stuff, I feel like they might.
I was gonna say it's kind of funny. It reminded me of when I was in eighth grade, my English teacher challenged me to write a scary story for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And all I'm going to say is I ended up in the therapist's office and my parents, and I never got the story back. To make this story really short. I wrote a story about a kid who's writing a story about a murderer. So the kid had a split personality. One kid was doing the writing about the murders and one kid was actually part, and the other personality was doing the murders. Mm-hmm. So the people who got murdered included his parents and his English teacher. I never got the story back.
This is the thing. This is why you are in entertainment now, because like that is you as a kid were writing something that is, I'm not going to say it's great, but it's definitely someone's first novel. Like there are a lot of fully grown adult men out there who are writing stories like that and you know, getting perfectly mid-range advances for them. So well done.
Oh, thank you.
Did you say you were eight?
Oh, eighth grade.
Now, so again, I'm not from here. So what does that work out to? Martin Simpson is fourth grade and he's 10. So is that like 14?
It's about 12, 13.
Okay. Oh, was Bart held back a year? That makes sense, actually.
If anything is true of this country, is that we slow everything down.
I'm hearing myself. So let me tell you a story. This morning, went on an adventure. My first day back in LA after several months, and went up to my local smoke shop to buy some poppers. That's an overshare, Richard. Okay. So I went to buy some poppers and get in there, and like I'm in the store for like 3 seconds, and I start having like a coughing fit. There is some kind of like nasty ass chemical smell everywhere. And the guy behind the counter is coughing. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, someone came in and threw something. And I'm like, okay. So I dipped out of there. And then I was like, I'm not going to, you know, go back. And I was like, oh, wait, I need to go tell that guy to get out. Cause like my throat is burning now from being in there for like maybe 15 seconds all up. So yeah. I go in and I'm like, you have to get out of there now. And he came out with me and like, was like having a coughing fit. And I like boned out at that point. But like, wow, I'm hearing myself now for the first time. And oh, I sound very sophisticated. I do not have the sound going on. So it's, I don't have my Edward G. Robinson twang happening at the moment. I've got it might just sound like I have a cold or that I'm like a mysterious person, but no, it's from some weird ass bleach smelling shit that was in the smoke shop.
You know what would be fantastic if that person is watching the show now going, you're welcome, podcast. Help you a lot. And we can do a shout out to a guy who threw crap at my guest for apparently helping the voice sound more sophisticated.
I like, look, I'm a paranoid weirdo, so like I came out of there being like, was this a terrorist attack? Has something happened? And they're like, who would target a smoke shop? Like, I think what happened is someone dropped something, maybe, or but like, man, it was that nasty like toilet cleaner smell, but like it smelled gritty. So I haven't gone on Google yet, which I feel like is a real maturation for me in terms of, you know, I'm the person who once I got body lice from a homeless man who sat next to me on a bus one time, and I'm a hairy boy, so I did the only responsible thing and made up a cure and got into a bathtub full of mouthwash and all my body hair fell out. And then as it grew back, because I'd never shaved my body before, yeah, I was unaware of what ingrown hairs looked like.
Yeah.
And so then I had all these ingrown hairs. I don't know what they are, so I just do the logical thing, zoom in on them real tight with my phone, take some pictures, reverse image search, and convince myself that I am in the final stages of dying from AIDS.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, I was a little confused as to how I had managed to miss the sort of 10-year period of untreated HIV that I'd never had, but I was like, I guess magic, you know? I guess it was magic. And I was like, I'm too embarrassed, because I did this mouthwash thing. I'm too embarrassed to talk to a doctor or tell anyone what's going on. I'm just going to quietly die. And so I started like, I would get up in the night and I would like jump on Facebook and I'd be looking up like people who weren't even my friends who I had like wronged in some way in elementary school and be like, dear Logan Parrish, I'm really sorry. I didn't believe. I'm doing like final goodbyes. This goes on for like 4 months. And then someone's like, I have a tattoo of myself on my arm as Leilani Bishop from the cover of Live Through This.
Okay.
And I have a friend who always asks to see it. And so I lifted it up And of course, there's always ingrown hairs on like the head of my face. And I'm like, yeah, he's dying too. And my friend's like, why do you have so many ingrown hairs? So I was like, oh, dick, is that what those are? And I just, yeah, just kind of went ham with some tweezers for a couple of days and cured everything.
Yeah, you know what's kind of funny? I really enjoyed the story, but what I fixated on is what in the world is a popper?
Oh, sorry, I forget. Yeah, so poppers are, it's a little, they're, you can't buy them in Canada, but you can get them at like any smoke shop here. They're a fun time drug for sexual activities where you they're very legal, but you sniff the vapor and it makes you wicked horny for about 5 minutes and relaxes certain muscles. This is such an overhair.
Well, this is definitely one of my more interesting interviews. I will certainly state.
We should have probably at the beginning been like, hey, what's the level here? And I know we're here to talk about Haunted Hill. It's not like I'm on my topic. I'm not here to promote my kids' books, so I'll be okay.
No, it's okay. This podcast is not made for children or teenagers. So we're just fine. Our demographic tends to be over 28, so we're doing just fine.
Okay, good. Yeah, that'll be fine. Everyone, if you're over 28, try poppers. They're great fun. $10, if you're paying more than $10 a bottle, you're being scammed. Unless you're outside of America, in which case I don't know what they cost. Don't do isopropyl or isobutyl. Don't do that pentyl stuff. It'll mess up your eyes.
So
helpful medical podcast now.
It is, but we can now definitely put that into our demographic as well. We're not more of a medical podcast. So why in the world would you move from New Zealand to this country?
Okay. So when I was a kid, I live in Canada now because of, I don't know if you know, there's been this ongoing unpleasantness for the past couple of years, that has jacked up everyone's shit. But, I have always wanted to live in Hollywood my whole life because when I was 8 years old, I think, I was watching Baywatch, and you know, whenever they would go underwater, it was so obvious they were in a tank. Like you could see the side of the tank. Mm. And I asked my mom why they did that. And she said, it's because the water is so polluted in Los Angeles that you can't even swim at the beach.
Huh.
And that's not, I mean, like that is kind of true, I guess. And this was early 90s, so it was more true, I guess. But like, that is not the reason they do that. My mother is not like a film expert. She does not have secret insider knowledge. She just knows that LA is dirty, I guess. But I grew up within walking distance of three different beaches, okay? I spent every goddamn weekend of my life having to like try and avoid my dad when he was like, do you want to help me get this crappy little boat out into the water? You have to learn how to tie a knot, put on a life jacket, you'll look cool, like just all this garbage. And I hated the beach. I hate sand. I love swimming. I'm a very good swimmer, actually, but I hate the beach. I want to swim in an actual swimming pool like on Baywatch. And so when I heard this, I was like, dip, that's where I'm going to live. I'm going to live in a place where no one can ever make me go to the beach. And if anyone tries to, I can say, you can't even swim there. It's too dirty.
Mm.
And I have been here for, Jesus, like 6 years now. And I still have not been to the beach.
Congrats.
So it's worked pretty well. And then, you know, obviously, like, there's only a certain amount you can do in a country like New Zealand. Like, a lot of people like it. That's their business. They've made their peace with that, but there's nothing to do there. There are like four comic stores in the entire country. Everyone talks about how great the scenery is, but like, fuck off. I've got Google Image and a high res screen. I don't need to go to a place. So like LA was always like the dream. And then when I was 30, 31, I think, and I was doing a convention. I'd been doing comics in New Zealand for so long. I was doing a convention where my booth was 60 feet long and 20 feet deep. I had a staff of 10. I had 200 books with my name on them. I had a giant goddamn screen playing like a loop of two mobile games based on my comics. There was an action figure, and like, I couldn't do anything else. Like, I could not go anywhere from there. And so I took everything I owned into the show the next day and marked down every book I had to $1. And with every book, you got either like a personal item or a page of the original art. And wow. I walked out of there with $30,000 in cash, six pairs of shoes and a plastic skeleton. And I went to the airport and I said, America, please. And I flew to LA. and have been there, well, now Canada as well, but kind of been there ever since.
Now, for our listeners who may not be familiar with the California area, your story is based on in Haunted Hill. Is that where you live in California?
It's the very center of Hollywood. I sort of triangulated it based on my first time here. I was here for a few weeks before I went off to Canada, and I triangulated it on the coffee shop I always went to, where my office is, and the recording studio where I was crashing at the time. I've lived in a lot of recording studios over the years, it turns out. Like, it's just a thing that just keeps happening to me, where I'm surrounded by a lot of instruments and I have no musical talent, which is a good feeling. it's very specifically the actual, like, the center of Hollywood. And there are a lot of stories out there that are big aspirational, whatever, you know, stories about living the dream in Hollywood. And there's a lot of stories about how Hollywood will fuck you over because it's a very bad place with a lot of very bad people in it. And what I'm trying to do is capture the part of Hollywood that I really love, which is there is no hierarchy based on wealth, because you never know if someone is paying $1,000 a month in rent because they've been there for 30 years, or they're paying $35,000 a month in rent for the house next door. You don't know if anyone is, like, you genuinely don't know if someone is a rock star or a homeless person. And as a result of that, like, obviously, if you walk into an office building and you're going in for a pitch meeting or whatever, like, there is a power dynamic. But on the street, at like the very human level, in a 7-Eleven, in a parking lot, everyone here is absolutely equal and no one gives a shit. And it's kind of lovely. Like, people are still assholes, don't get me wrong. There's some real hot garbage here. But, like, I was living in a place that was very, very nice. And I was crashing in a friend's place, but it was, and I was there for about a month. And we had, every morning, someone was shitting on our kitchen floor. and no one would believe me. Everyone kept saying it was the cat. Because I woke up early because I'm not a musician. So I would clean it up because I don't want there to be human feces on the floor. But no one would believe me that it was a person. But, like, this was in a nice neighborhood, in a nice house, with nice people. And it was just, the back door was unlocked, and we never went out into the backyard. So we didn't know that someone was, like, fully cooking meth, running an extension cord out of our kitchen window, and coming in and shitting on our floor in the night. And here's the thing. I tell some people that, and they're like, that sounds horrible. I'm like, no, that's a wicked adventure. Like, this is my favorite place in the entire world.
You know, I also find it, I mean, fascinating, just the name of the place, Haunted Hill, is such a fascinating name itself, an intriguing name. I mean, is there a story behind that as well? And why, and that name for the name of your comic book also gives it a certain kind of...
It gives it a big disappointment because there are no ghosts in it, is what you're saying.
well, I mean, it kind of gives a bit of gravitas because that, like, that, you know, name, like, Haunted Hill. So, I mean,
everywhere around here has, like, a sort of a fancier extra name. So, like, it's all Hollywood, but, like, are you in Hollywood, or are you in Whitley Heights, or are you in the foothills, or are you in the Dell, or, you know. And a lot of these places are just named for, like, a developer, or just, you know, a lot of the streets around here are just named for things that are irrelevant to the area. It was partly that, and then partly that, you know, there's the movie House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
And that is a movie that is actually, it's actually about a haunted house on a regular hill. And I think that title is garbage. So I wanted to play with that a little bit. So the origin comes up later in the series, but basically it's that the guy who started the housing development there 100 years ago was named Obadiah Haunted. And it's because in those days you would get your surname from what you did for a living. And he'd made his fortune being a vessel for ghosts that were cast out of wealthy British children during exorcisms.
Oh, yeah.
So he was just a man filled with ghosts.
Oh, that sounds awesome. It also sounds almost symbolic of people's lives, you know, maybe living in the area.
Mm. Well, the other thing is, like, I wanted to come up with a reason that Hollywood was weird. You know, like, these are all coincidences, but they're coincidences that don't happen in other places, I think. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, there was an outbreak of the Black Plague in downtown LA. That happened at the same time that some developers had been paying off certain people to ship homeless people from what is effectively Skid Row to other parts of town to devalue places and give them cover for arson attempts on places that had historic landmark status, such as my office. I have chased a number of people out of this building who were like men in business suits jamming newspapers and mail slots and lighting them on fire. It's an insane place. Someone tried to burn down the church next door over Christmas. They didn't know anyone was in there and it got put out. But so they were shipping out homeless people to different places to cause this. This caused an outbreak of the plague all over LA because it was spreading. This was also happening at the same time that COVID was first kicking off, which then combined with the point where all of the gun stores started offering home delivery because everyone was so much more scared than usual, and all the courier companies stopped requiring signatures. So now we have a lot of guns on doorsteps. Homeless people are becoming far scarier to, like, you know, middle class boring people than they've ever been, because now there is the potential they were infected with, like, the plague, as well as the regular fear of a person's near me and COVID exists. But now they also were getting themselves guns that they were finding unattended on doorsteps. And I was, my whole office complex, like, cleared out at the beginning of COVID. So I was the only one using it. And my roommate at the time was not being super safe. So I was still coming in here every day just to kind of have some sanctuary and have this building to myself. And I was on my way in one day and I trip over an AR-15 sticking out of this dude's tent. He comes out the door and he looks at me and goes, "Oh, you're cool." I'm like, "Yeah, okay." I'm like, I've given this dude my money every day for several years as I walk past him twice. Like, I have never been more glad of any action ever taken. But, you know, like, I don't think that number of weird things happen all at once somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to find a reason for it. And so my thought was Obadiah Haunted was buried underneath the development when he died, and the ghosts have slowly been leaking out. There are no ghosts in the story. They're all underground. And that is what is creating this energy that just makes Hollywood weird. The story itself has, like, everything in it is very human. There are very real emotions, very real conversations, but with this, like, ridiculous logic behind everything. Like, there's a thing coming up later where, you know, Eva, the main character, she has moved back there. She used to live here when she was a kid, and she has, and that's a weird thing in its own way. Like, being someone who was born and raised in Hollywood, that's a specific type of person, because they're not in the film industry or anything like that. They're just like, this is what their normal is. So she's moving back because her wife got a really good museum job. And the reason her wife got a really good museum job is because, and, you know, because it is pretty unusual for a woman her age to be getting a job at this kind of level in the museum system, which is pretty competitive. But so many old white dudes have been being arrested for dressing up as monsters to scare away tourists in the museum industry lately, that there are just a lot of openings. So, like it is full on Scooby-Doo logic, just with human characters behind it. Like, there's a woman who is the actual basis for, I've just said she's the basis for the movie Blank Check, but they recast it as, like, a boy when they wrote the movie. But she actually just got in tight with the mob bosses and invested her money wisely. And so now she's just, like, a wealthy adult who's very responsible. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of throwing all the spaghetti at the wall on this one.
Well, I think one fascinating thing about your comic book is a web comic book that is totally free on your website. So that either suggests this is a true labor of love or one of the oddest marketing strategies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, it's so poorly thought through. This is like, I've been doing this so long. And as I pointed out, I am a millionaire from my comics. He lied. I've been doing this so long, and I have made a living from comics for many, many years. And it's a really hard thing to do. You have to kind of be willing to work. I mean, I work 16 hours a day most days. I have not had a day off for 2 years. I work through Christmas. I work through my birthday. This past weekend, I did a comic convention, and that just meant that I had to do 7 hours of work through the night to make up for the drawing time that I was losing. And I wouldn't have it any other way. I love doing it. And what sucks is that there are companies who will take advantage of that. And I got really sick of the fact that because I work fast, people started taking longer to get me notes on things because they knew I could do things last minute. And as soon as that's happening, I lose interest because if someone's being a dick to me, I'm not super excited about doing their book. And so I mean, I'm not going to call anyone out here, but like in August of 2020, I sent in a two-page synopsis for a book that I was contracted to do with a publisher. It took the editor 8 months to get back to me with notes for a two-page synopsis. When she got back to me with the notes, the email said, and this was now May 2021, and she said, can you have this book finished by July? I'm like, no, it's a 192-page full-color comic. Like, no, I absolutely can't. But what's worse, like, yes, that kind of stress sucks. What sucks more for me personally is waiting for those notes to come through, having nothing to do. Like, I've got to draw 988 pages of comics this year, and that's going to probably kill me. But in order to get it done, I have to never stop. Mm. And so if someone is letting me down by not getting me the thing in time or getting me something when they said they would get it to me, then I have literally nothing to do because I'm doing everything in a specific order as it needs to be done. And so I had this, like, I had 2 days off between, I had 2 days where I had to find something to fill my time with at the beginning of last year. And so I wrote and drew a little 6-page story. And then I looked at it and I was like, I quite like this. I think it could be longer. And so I just wrote the next 6 pages and the notes didn't come through. And so I drew them and then I wrote the next 6 pages and I drew them. And suddenly every 2 days I was writing, I'd write 6 pages in the morning. And then over 2 days I would draw it and hand color it and scan it. And that was it. There's no other alteration to it. Nothing is done digitally. I've cut out every part of the comic making process that I don't enjoy. And I realized, like, I got a few offers from publishers for it because I've been posting on Instagram and things and saying, like, this is one of the new things I'm working on. And I thought, I don't want to be in a situation where this is the only comic that I have total control over. I don't want to be in a situation where anyone else can tell me what to do with it. Like if I wrote, I write the 6 pages, I draw them immediately. There's no time to stop and think and worry and like let the story go in a new direction, or even like of course there are gonna be points where I'm like, oh dip, I should have done something like really different there and I won't realize till later on, but it's like, too bad, it's going somewhere new, it's going somewhere organic and weird, and like it feels like a living thing to me. And so I thought, well, I'm making all this stuff, and also the other thing is, like, I've got 250 books, 253 books now published around the world. And like, I'm the most famous person that you've never heard of. It's like, you know, you look me up and suddenly there's all the credits and you're like, oh, Deb, I've never heard of any of these things, but like, he's everywhere. And for a long time, I was saying, hey, I've got all these books, but they weren't anywhere for people to see. Because when I left New Zealand, I just kind of left it all behind and started from scratch here. And I got a series on my first day in the country, and that went for a year and a half. And then there was like a slight break on that because of some complicated other things with another title that the publisher had that was causing them some problems. And so I was building a haunted house for my wedding, and I was going to New York for my honeymoon. And so I started making up a new series in the meantime. And then while I was in New York, I get contacted saying, can you come in for a top secret meeting? There's a new publisher who are not announced yet, and we want you to be our first person. And so suddenly I have a second series and then a third with them. And then the other series came back because of like sales were good and Free Comic Book Day wanted us. And suddenly I'm doing three ongoings, and like, there was no time for me to ever stop and say, like, there's more out there from me, or I can look at getting old stuff reprinted or anything like that. And I hated it because there was nothing in the world. There was like, if you went to a comic store, you may or may not know about Blastosaurus. You may or may not know Black Sand Beach. You may or may not know Carbordia. If you don't go to a comic store, or if you haven't met me in person at one of the few conventions I've done, thanks COVID, then you have never heard of me in North America. And I hated it. So I thought, fuck it, I'm putting everything on the internet. In October, I revamped my website and uploaded, I think, 2,000 pages of of comics, like every single issue of Blastosaurus. I haven't posted the spin-offs yet where it's him doing really boring human shit, like making tea and watering plants, but they'll go off at some point. Yeah. Like there's a bunch of graphic novels, there's my book Ghost Ghost, there's a bunch of short comics, there's a like there's just everything on there, because I was sick of saying I've done so many books and you can't look at them. And I thought, well, I need something to have people have a reason to keep coming to the website. There needs to be, I don't want it to be an archive. I don't want it to be a sad museum of Richard. So I might as well start putting out Haunted Hill. And I can do 6 pages a week. I'll probably do it for 12 issues, I guess. Like, I don't know if I'll have time to do any more this year. Maybe I'll take a little hiatus after that and then like dip back in later. Maybe someone can publish it now that I've finished those 12 issues. If someone wants to come to me and say, we will publish it as it is, great. But like, I don't know, it's the only one where I don't have to make any changes ever. And that feels really nice.
Well, I mean, another interesting thing about the comic book that's very unique is that it's done in a very unique art style. It's drawn traditionally on paper. You're coloring it with markers. Is there a particular reason why for this comic book you chose this avenue?
I hate coloring. I just hate it. It's a horrible, horrible process. Like there are some people, like, I don't want to get caught out saying that coloring sucks. Like, there are some people who can do a fucking wildly good job with color. They can tell story with color. And those people are incredible. But here's the thing about coloring, especially digital coloring. You can get to a perfectly acceptable level without having to be very good. Like, like there are so many helpful plugins. I use a thing called multifill or flatten or something, and it literally fills in all the spaces for me, and then I just go through and bucket fill different colors to make sure everything looks right. Like, and then I go through and I do some gradients and it's just the same as drawing, or I do some like cut shadow stuff because it's just the same as drawing, and then everything looks good enough. Like, I will never win an award for my coloring, but it definitely looks good enough. And anyone, like, I am not good at it, but it's good enough. And it's good enough for being published. It's good enough for being published by major publishers with real big boy money who are putting fancy books out there. And people look at it and they go, oh, wow, you colored this really well. And the secret is I didn't. I colored it adequately. And, like, it bums me out that, like, the last thing I do on a book is color it. Like, I finished the fun part. I did the writing, which is the best. I did the drawing, which is the second best. Then I did the scanning, which is very boring. And then I did the coloring, which takes a long time and sucks. gives me a bad back. I'm always leaning over a very warm tablet because my tablet's wicked old. And I just didn't want to be engaged with that anymore. So I wrote and drew a memoir right at the beginning of COVID. Which no one's seen yet, which details how, like, there's a lot more Popper's use in that one. And that is, like, I wanted it to feel, you know, like a comic memoir should, and be a bit wishy-washy and a bit sloppy and a bit cartoony at points, and have that kind of real human vibe to it. And so I did that one in the same way, all in black and white. There's no color in that one at all, but black and white markers. And I really enjoyed it, and I really liked the way it looked. And then I realized that I had this scanner that did a weird version of scanning. Epson released a scanner called the WF7620, which is the only one that has this feature. If you use Epson Scan 1, you can set it on professional mode, and you can scan it as a photo. And that's like, any other scanner that does that is going to cost you literally thousands of dollars. But this like $200 scanner that I picked up by chance 6 years ago does it, and it looks absolutely wild. So I scan every page as a photograph. I then scan every page a second time as a document, multiply it through each other in Photoshop, which takes like 10 seconds. That's the only digital alteration there is. So the lettering is still crisp, the line work is still crisp, but that, like, it looks like the actual original art. You know, and that I've never seen that anywhere, that I can like look at a digital, you know, look at a webcomic or look at a printed comic and say, this actually looks like the original pages of the art, in the way that like the artist editions that, who did the artist edition books? What company was that? Was it IDW? Someone. Dark Horse?
Well, I know DC. I know DC does director's cut, which is basically, I think, similar.
Someone was doing them for like, and they're publishing stuff by all different, from all different companies of like old stuff. And it was like actually it was done at the size of the original art. I had one for The Spirit and it was like insanely huge and inconvenient. So like, I was like, oh, you know what? I'm really happy to look at this for like 10 minutes and then I don't want it anymore. So I left it in New Zealand, I think. But you know, it was that kind of thing. Like I loved that look. And so I thought, well, fuck it, I can do that. And maybe my scanner will break one day and then the series will just end, I guess. I did, when I discovered that the scanner could do this, I went a little bit buck wild and started buying them up used just in case they ever broke. So I do have four of the damn things now and they're big. They're big and inconvenient.
Well, you know, it's kind of nice. I enjoyed the opportunity to read Haunted Hill. I thought it was a really fun story. And I do think the character, Eva, it's kind of cool in the fact that she's so uncool. You know, I mean, and I kind of find, and I may be wrong in how I interpreted it, but how I interpret it was her desire to be liked is kind of like her tragic flaw of her character. Would mm-hmm. that be right? Or would you give a different opinion?
I think you're really spot on there. Like, she really wants to be, included. She wants to be like, okay, she wants to apologize all the time for everything that is, like, she's trying to hide all of her flaws. And in doing so, she just bumbles through everything. But she's also incredibly outspoken. And like, she's a person who is frustratingly right about things. So like, you know, the for people who haven't seen it yet, the story of the first book, the first 6-issue arc, is she needs to get home. It should be a 10-minute ride. She's just got a just had a job interview to be a daytime janitor at a sex club, prison themed sex club, here in LA, and she's got to get home. Her Uber cancels on her, which we'll never explain, but like apps tend to kick her off because she's obviously unbearable. And so she gets a ride home with these people who are in their 20s. So as a 35-year-old getting in a car with people in their 20s, you know that like what should be a 10-minute ride home is going to turn into several hours because they will want to go and get donuts, or they will want to go and explore a trampoline park, or they will want to pick up a homeless guy who can tell them crazy stories, or they will all fight with each other and everything will fall apart because of drama that's been going on for what feels like forever, but it's probably just 2 or 3 days in their life. And the thing is, like, as a 35-year-old, when you see people in their 20s doing shitty stuff, you want to call them out. You want to, like, give them your wisdom. You're right. You know, when you're in your 20s, you go through that phase where you think you have the smartest takes on film and music of anyone in the entire world, and everyone older or younger than you is clearly an idiot. I think in your mid-30s is when you feel that way about, like, about personal interactions and the way people treat each other. I think you go through the same level of arrogance about it there. And like those people in their 20s who have really strong opinions about film, they're usually right. What they don't factor in is that like, I don't fucking care if The Godfather is better than Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion. Only one of those films is going to be watched by me several more times in my life. And it's not the one that they think is good.
Right, right, right.
And like, so, you know, like they're right. I don't care. Eva is right. Where like when she calls out these dudes for just being shitty dudes, like she's right, but they don't care and they're annoyed by her. And like, and she wants to be a good person and she's always making these bargains to be a good person. But there's all these little hints along the way that like, she fundamentally isn't. Like she's so concerned with looking like a good person that, I mean, I get to have like a lot of fun with it with these like little moments where When she opens the ice cream freezer at the gas station, she doesn't close it. Like, you just see that in the background of one of the panels. Like, when she puts out her cigarette butt, she never thinks, is this going to be inconvenient to someone else? Like, she literally puts it out in the doorway of a goddamn pho place later on. Like, she's so concerned with what she thinks is the right thing to do that she never notices what the actual normal human thing to do in a situation is going to be. She's very fun to write. She's also very fun to draw because her face is consistently off model. Like she, like I just get to kind of just play with expressions with her as she goes through this wild range of emotions. And then on top of that, she's 35 and hanging out with people in their 20s. She just wants to keep up with them, but she's tired.
I know that feeling. I'm in my 40s. I know that feeling along of just being, you know, too tired to be out.
Yep.
Yeah, I really do love all the touches that you have in your comic. I think one that hit me the most was the concept of shelter. The club designed after a homeless shelter club after they tore down the actual homeless shelter club. And there's something about that just seems to scream corporate America to me, like an exact nutshell. Was that specifically just for a story beat, or are you actually giving a moral lesson about commercialism?
I'm not going to be like the main authority on why capitalism sucks. Like, we all kind of know it sucks now, and it feels like a kind of easy well to go to be like, and look, they did another bad. But it's such a the idea of there's the song Common People by Pulp, where it says, because you think that poor is cool. For some reason, that is the most enduring cultural touchstone for me. Like, no matter how, I mean, I don't know if there was that article last week of like the vibe shift is happening. It's like, okay, well, how many vibe shifts before Samuel Beckett can vibe shift home? Like, it's all so dumb, but like every time a vibe shift happens, poor is still cool. The richest people will wear the shittiest stuff, or they're like, or you'll go to a like whatever Burberry store and buy something with holes in it because it's deliberate. Like, and then you'll get cheap knockoffs of things that are already meant to look cheap and shitty, and then you'll know that someone's actually poor because the holes in their jeans have a seam around them because it's machine produced rather, or like produced by probably a child, really, honestly, it's fast fashion. Suddenly there's a hierarchy in fashion of levels of, do you look poor because you're rich, or do you look like a poor version of a rich person looking poor because you're poor? Or yeah. Do you somehow loop back around like Tipper Gore on music censorship by like, you know, actually being poor and then having like a cooler version that the rich people don't have after all? And it's such a horrible spiral. But like, there is, as far as I know, there is no club here that is actually a converted homeless shelter. But if I found out there was one, I would not be even a little bit surprised. You know, like my favorite bar here is a like speakeasy in the back of a hotel that is a genuine old speakeasy, and now they make it look like one and charge $21 for their cheapest drink, and like because like, hey look, we've got a vibe of a cool old illegal thing, pay lots of money, and I was like, okay, it's nice though, so I'll go. I'm an asshole too.
So, I mean, it's the idea of shelter also seems to remind me a lot of the character Junior, who's he's not homeless, even though he's supposed to appear homeless, and he lives at a place of the perfect bounce. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of tease a little bit where the story is going and a little bit about the character, of the importance of the character of Junior to your story?
So Junior is actually very specifically based on the homeless guy with the AR-15 that I talked about earlier. Who I had a conversation with, who asked if he could, he'd always see me like walking back and forth. I get to work at like 4 a.m. A lot of the time I come into my office very early. And one day he asked me why I'm like, and I know sometimes I'll stay here for like 6 weeks at a time in the office just cause I'm on a deadline. And one day he asked me why I'm like, so what I do. And I was like, oh, I make comic books. And then I gave him some of my comics, and he was like, oh, shit, can you put me in a comic? And I was like, absolutely. And so then this all, what sucks, this is, I'm sorry, the story's going to get dark and sad here. I drew all of Haunted Hill while I was up in Canada during the early stages of COVID, or not all of it, but the story. And since I've come back down here, he's no longer there. And like, maybe he's moved on somewhere else, but like, there is, the big change in Hollywood is that the homeless people who had been there that I would see every day on my way to work or on my way to the store, whatever, they were the same ones all the time. The guy, you know, the guy who deliberately looked and dressed like Willie Nelson, who had an Instagram following because of it. This guy, Junior, who was always outside the 7-Eleven and now had an AR-15. Like, the guy who always wanted to talk to me about his novel that he was writing, the woman with the American flag who was angry about volcanoes. Like, these people are gone now. And I have to assume that they died. Like, I just have to assume that maybe it wasn't from COVID, but it certainly was from, there was no foot traffic for a grip and people weren't giving them money anymore. And that sucks. So I wanted to put Junior in. I wanted to put Junior in a comic anyway. And so then, like, and it's just kind of, you know, I don't know him. Like, I talked to him a bunch of times, but I don't know him. I have no way, obviously, there's no way for me to get in touch with him. It's not like he's on Facebook and connecting to me. All I know is his name is Junior, and he used to live outside the 7-Eleven. One thing I really enjoyed about, a lot of the people around here is that so often there is a big story, and you never know how much of it is true. And, you know, they'll tell you that, like, Sunset Willie is the Willie Nelson guy who's gone as well. He will say things like, he would say things like that his brother has a place in the hills and he goes there for every other month. And his brother's a really rich record producer. Or then he'll tell a story about how he goes to Florida. If I don't see him for a week, he says he was in Florida because he had to go to Disney World because he helped them design the soundscape for the outdoor areas there. And then, like, you know, obviously, like, these stories are not true. Like, I once bumped into Willie, and he was, like, literally, like, dripping in gold. Like, he was just covered in gold jewelry. Mm. I was like, where'd you get all this gold? And he was like, oh, Stevie Wonder gave it to me. It makes him angry that he can't see it. And he was just like, Willie, you can have all my gold now. And, like, obviously, that didn't happen. Like, obviously. But Willie Nelson, was like, guy who looks like Willie Nelson, was also wearing a lot of gold jewelry, so he did get it from somewhere, you know. And I, what I like is, like, you know, when there is this level of weirdness of there being a million ghosts underground that have leaked out of Obadiah Haunted's legs, that maybe the stuff does become possible. So if Junior is talking about this place, Perfect Bounce, that used to be, that was meant to be a trampoline park in the 70s and is now nothing, or now just another abandoned warehouse that is, like, hidden behind a wig store. Like, it's actually pretty plausible that if you dig down just a little bit, maybe that part really was true. And I wrote a kid's book, like a decade ago now, called Gorillas in Our Midst. And it's based on the idea, like, this kid says, you should always carry a banana with you because you never know when there might be a gorilla around. And the premise was that there are gorillas everywhere and we don't notice them because, like, we're not paying attention. And so there's, like, all these people turn out to be gorillas when he takes a second look at them. And like, they often have jobs as, like, ninjas or doctors or deep sea divers because they get to wear masks that way so we don't notice them. And they wear really good disguises, like t-shirts that say, I'm not a gorilla. And so you'll see, like, a little old librarian who says, are you enjoying that? And they And then you'll see her climbing the shelf. And it was that, like, I told that story because I wanted to live in a world where there might be gorillas everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like someone asked me in an interview a few months ago if I actually believe in ghosts. And I said, like, yeah, I do. Like, I've seen ghosts, I've experienced ghosts. But also, I can't imagine how miserable I would be if I woke up every morning certain that ghosts weren't real. Like, oh, another day when I'm not going to become best friends with a ghost? Cool. Like, why am I even getting out of bed? And so I like when someone tells me a story that sounds buck wild, I like to just assume it's true. It doesn't hurt me. It doesn't hurt anyone to be like, yeah, I guess Sunset Willie knows Stevie Wonder and he gave him a bunch of gold. Cool.
I mean, it'd be nice to live in a world where anything is possible. It would hate to think that I'm just bringing it up now because I watched the show Supernatural. Ever see the TV show Supernatural?
I've seen a little bit of it, but I have such strong feelings on Gilmore Girls that I just couldn't enjoy a show that had that dude in it.
Well, there was an episode, and Supernatural obviously deals with the supernatural of the world, and the guys go to another dimension, which is supposed to be ours, where nothing exists. There's no monsters, there's no angels, demons, anything like that. and it's supposed to be our world. And I thought to myself, what a boring fucking world that is, if that's what they're saying our world is compared to what the show is supposed to be. Yeah. And it would be horrible to think that the world is just that incredibly boring.
Yeah. Yeah. It would just, like, how could you? I mean, the other part of it is, I think a lot of people do believe the world is that boring. And I think that when they believe that, it becomes that boring for them. Like, I get really angry when people, like, well, maybe not angry. I get kind of hurt by it a little, actually, when people don't believe me when I tell a story. Like, I have no reason to lie. I seek adventure. If any situation comes up, I have two choices, I think, what will make a better story later? And I'll go with that option. And as a result, I've had some buck wild times. Like, I've had some terrible times. Like, I was, when I first got to LA, I had no plan in place. I was just gonna, like, figure it out later. And then the place I was crashing, this dude who'd been crashing there with us, turned out to be like an absolute piece of garbage. And he on Halloween, he trashed the recording studio completely, and we all got kicked out. And so then, like, November 1st, I was suddenly homeless. And I had all this money, but what I'd done on Halloween is I'd taken it to the bank, and they'd said, this is a suspicious amount of New Zealand cash you're bringing, because it was the $30,000 and the plastic skeleton. We have to, like, hold on to this before we make it available to you for 6 weeks. So for 6 weeks, I didn't have that money. And I had also paid my friend's phone bill on my credit card when I first arrived, because he had found a scam to rip off banks when he was a teenager and stole like $200,000. And now he can't get a card with an account with any bank except this one. And he always loses his card because he's a drunk. And so I paid his phone bill for him. And then I'd forgotten I'd done it. So when I saw this weird charge on my credit card, I was like, oh no, I'm in America and fraud happened. So I canceled my credit card. So I had no card, no money. I had, like, I think I had $111 in American cash. And I didn't want to tell anyone that I fucked up so badly, because it was all through stupid decisions. And so for 6 weeks, I was just homeless, living with $111. And I got, you know, I had some adventures. I met a nice man who threatened to stab me, but he had a whole tent full of doll heads that he let me hang out in one day. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And like, I tell stories to people like that. I'll say, like, this, you know, this thing, like, the other day I was at a party. And months ago now, I was at a party, because it was right before Omicron hit, that, like, wonderful middle period where we all, like, were like, we're vaccinated and we're safe. And then, like, 2 days later, like, there's this new one.
Yeah.
But I went to this party, and I helped them set up, and I was like, I'm gonna go out for a walk, because I hate being the early at a party. And so I went to McDonald's, and I was in McDonald's buying my food, and I come out. And there are these two elderly men standing in the parking lot, and they both have their dicks out, and they're both pissing on each other. And they're screaming at the top of their lungs, golden arches, golden shower, over and over.
Okay.
And I look, and there's this woman who's filming them. These guys are like, I'm getting like 60s or 70s, I'm guessing, pissing on each other in the parking lot. And this woman is filming them, and she looks at me and she says, don't worry, honey, it's for TikTok. And I'm like, oh cool, TikTok's for old people now, that's so nice, I guess I can get on there. But I went back to the party, finished my McDonald's, and I told someone the story, and they're like, that shit doesn't happen to anyone. How do you see that and no one else would? I'm like, because I'm paying attention, and because, like, I don't know, I'm a garbage adult who still eats McDonald's, even though I know that's slowly killing me. But you know, it's yeah, I always choose the adventure. And I think there is a lot of magic in this world. You know, there's this fish. There is this, I don't know what it's made of. I'm going to guess cement, like this sort of statue of a fish in the base of this fountain out near my office, like in the complex my office is in. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It's been here since 1926. The fountain doesn't work. Like, it hasn't worked for decades. But this fish is still there. And so many people had to say yes. Like, thought of, designed, made, and approved. Like, so many people had to say yes for this damn fish to be there. And so many people have had to say, we're not going to remove this fish. This place has gone through so many revamps, and that damn fish still remains. And I love them. I love him so much. This weird gaping mouth fish. He's the fish on the cover of issue 2 of Haunted Hill, by the way. I have always said to everyone who's ever seen the fish, I bet someone fucked that fish because he has a big gaper of a mouth. And everyone's always like, ah, you're insane. Anyway, so one night, it's like 2 a.m. I'm coming in through the back entrance to the complex on my way to the office. And I hear this noise and I look over and there is this dude just like going ham on this fish mouth. This is a cement fish, keep in mind. And it's in a fountain. So he's like, there's no water in the fountain, so it doesn't work. But like, he's in there. It looks uncomfortable. And so I just sit down on the bench opposite him. And he looks at me. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, you don't get to ask. Like, I'm not going to miss this. Like, I've always thought this had happened. I don't want to watch it, but I'm not going to miss it. And I watched him fuck a fish for 20 minutes. And the next day, I walked past it on my way up to get some breakfast. And there were no cobwebs in that fish mouth for the first time. And, like, I don't know, it just made me smile. Just made me feel a little bit happier. And now I can say to people, if anyone ever says, I wonder if anyone's fucked that fish, I can say, yeah. And I got to see it. Like, this is my moon landing.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've just lived a fascinating life, sir. And how close, when you're writing Haunted Hill, is there a connection between what you're writing and the adventure that you're living?
Yeah, like, I'm going to be real honest. Like, right before COVID hit, I definitely did get in a car full of 20-year-olds and went on, like, I was walking home and it was like 11 o'clock at night and this car pulls up and goes, hey, Mark. And I go, yeah. And I get in the car and they're like, you're not Mark. I'm like, yeah, what are we up to? And I went off on this like adventure with them where we did get donuts and we actually broke into a tire yard and had like deep and meaningful emotional conversations because they were in their 20s. And then they had to, I don't want to give away the later part of the story, but they had to break into someone's house to, I thought, retrieve some nude photographs of one of their friends. That was not what they were doing. They were getting revenge for the nude photos being distributed on the internet already because I'm old and I forgot the cloud exists. So stuff like that is based on real life. Some of the behavior of the dudes in the story is pretty close. Like, if you're a person who knows me and you're reading this, you'll be like, I'm pretty sure I remember Name Redacted doing that. And like, I'm pretty sure I remember a time when Name Redacted was dating a girl who they couldn't remember the name of, so they named her after the place she was from. Like there's some, you know, there are bad people who I've met. And when someone does a terrible thing, I'm like, you know what? Put that in the book. Alex, every time he comes across something terrible happening or something weird that's very like particular to Hollywood, he calls me. He's like, I've got something for Haunted Hill. I'm like, you have no idea what Haunted Hill is meant to be. You never understand this. You've never been right about a single thing, but please tell your garbage story.
Well, like I said, it really is a great story. So time to plug, where can our listeners find it?
RichardFairgray.com.
And how often is new parts of it released?
Every week, every Wednesday, I put up 6 new pages. I think at the moment there are like 2 2/3 of an issue. Each issue is 18 pages plus a cover. Just because I like 6-page chapters for some reason. We're 2 chapters into issue 3. So like, 48 pages of comic are already up. And it will be going until, I think, at least September. And I say that because, like, I've got enough drawn to go till then. but, like, I'm, after we get off this call, I'm formatting the final pages for another book that's coming out in August and sending those off. And then I don't have anything officially scheduled for tomorrow, so it's pretty likely I will just start a new Haunted Hill book.
Well, like I said, it's really cool, and I hope the listeners, check it out on your webpage. I want to thank you so much, Mr. Fairgray, for speaking with me. You are awesome, and I really enjoyed your stories.
Thank you. This was so much fun. I would like, please have me back every time I have a book going, and I do a lot of them. So,
well, anytime you want to come back, the door is always open for you, sir.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay.